You're listening to the Empty Stringers podcast, where every week we talk about locating, catching, and the conservation of redfish. My hope is to share with you what I'm seeing from the polling platform so that together we can catch more fish. Think of it as your weekly fishing report. Welcome back to the podcast, folks. I'm your host, Matt Parrish. I am still fighting this. I don't know. Maybe I got the COVID-24. I don't know. But doing much better than I was, but still have some intense sinus pressure. But life goes on. I went fishing last week. No, not last week. Monday, I had a rare Monday trip. A buddy from church had been wanting to get out with his dad. His dad's been fishing the bay, the Galveston Bay system for 30 years, but had never done the kind of stuff that we were going to do, which is, I love that. When you can take someone out of their comfort zone and put them in a situation where they're doing something different that they didn't even know was possible to do. I thought, man, that's super cool. So we had about a 12 to 15 mile an hour wind, which isn't great, but it isn't terrible. It's fishable. We also had a full moon. Now we had a full moon and we had a southeast wind blowing coupled with an incoming tide. And that, I knew, you couple all three of those things, full moon, easterly wind, incoming tide, you got a recipe for a lot of water getting pumped up into the marshes. And when it's been really low and you have one of those big pushes, it's going to be on. It's the opposite of a dump. So in the dump, the water floods out on a westerly wind, outgoing tide. It's usually paired with a cycle of the moon that brings a stronger tide, either on the new or the full side. And that's when you get your really good dumps. The same thing occurs only on the incoming tide, and the springtime is the best time for that to happen. And so I knew we had a good shot, but I was a little afraid. Sometimes the full moon nixes all that. Sometimes a full moon turns it on and it's just crazy. And let me tell you what, it was absolutely bonkers good. It wasn't just good for me in my area. I saw on social media, lots of people hammered them on Monday. It was a great day to be on the water. We began, you know, rolling out, shut the boat down, and I crawl up on the platform. I've got four schools of redfish in this one lake I get to pick. So I start upwind, we start going down, and I have to start trying to teach these guys how to cast at a moving open water school of redfish. And so I'm going to try to relay to you the instruction that I like to give in effort and in hopes that if you are doing this on your own, that you might take into consideration some of the things I'm saying and have a better success rate. So the birds are genuinely this time of year over the middle to back half of the school. There is usually a lead fish or two out front. They kind of make a somewhat of a chevron pattern in the water, like kind of an arrow. Not always, but that's generally what you're dealing with. And the school is usually wider than you think it is, and the lead fish is usually a little further out in front than you think he is. So if you've got a school of redfish, if you're in shallow enough water, this time of year, you're going to see their tails. Meaning if you're in like less than a foot, You're going to be able to see their tails, and that makes it super easy. You can tell what direction they're moving based off of that. If you can't see their tails, usually the birds are facing the direction that the school is moving. That is mostly true. It does not always have to be true, but you want to throw your lure. You want to track where they're headed. You want to throw your lure in front of the school by a foot or two. Count 1,000, 2,000, and start slowly reeling it in front of the school, hoping that you're going to snag a fish on the near side of the school in the front of the pack. That's your best bet, because if you peel that fish off, sometimes that school, or at least a portion of that school, stays together. And if you've got more than one angler on the boat, or you're fishing with a buddy and y'all both want to get a shot, you know, one of you hits one side of the school, the other hits the other side of the school, hopefully you can hook up that way. But if you want to make sure one of you gets a fish, you do it that way. And as soon as he sets the hook, that other lure needs to be splashing into the water, because your window is short right there. Most common mistakes I see are people throwing right in the middle of the school. You're going to spook them. You're going to bonk one of them. Now, there are days when the fish turn around and hammer it. Just they get in a special mood and it's on. If I see a lot of times people throw behind the school. They throw too far over the school, and by the time they reel the lure back, they're reeling it straight through the middle and their line is rubbing the backs of the redfish and blows the school up. There's a whole lot of ways to do it wrong. There's only one or two ways to do it right. You got to be out in front of the school, whether either you're directly in front and they're coming towards you, which I try to avoid if I can, but with all the wind that we have this time of year, sometimes that's just the way it goes. I try to be offset of the school so that if we miss the school, they pass in front of the boat and we can turn around and chase them. And that also gives the guys on the front a shot to hit in front of the school and drag in front of their faces. So you got to let your lure get down on the bottom. Don't try. I mean, there are days, I'm painting with a broad brush when I say not to do something, but there are days whenever you can throw a gurgler, you can throw a topwater and they'll reach up there and get it. You're going to catch less fish than you will if you just throw a paddle tail or a sinking shrimp imitation fly at them. Let it sink. Drag it across the bottom. We kept the fish, cut him open. The inside was full of mud and shrimp yet again. That is, that's the name of the game. They're sucking this stuff up. Every fish we caught, which we caught 12 fish and blew several other opportunities. It was a 25 fish day if we had played all of our cards right. But things happen, right? It's you got two guys out there that are good at casting, but not used to doing what we were doing, and it's a learning curve. And sometimes you can do everything right, and it just doesn't matter. Some schools are going to get spooky, and they're going to bust up. So every fish we boated had a bulging stomach full of shrimp and mud. I would not have wanted to guide on Tuesday, because all of those fish probably sat around in the mud all day and digested their food. I'm hoping they're ready to eat again on Thursday. I don't expect them to eat as good as they did on Monday. That was kind of a special deal. We've got higher water now. The fluctuations aren't as huge, but we do have good strong incomings. And so I'm hoping we're going to have a good day. What color do you throw? Doesn't freaking matter. Does not matter. I would say the smaller the better, but we threw the four and a quarter inch Caden lure at him, caught 7 fish on that, caught the other 5 fish on a down south. We threw darker colors because the water was super muddy. Now, in March, one of the things that you do to find fish is look for cleaner water. The water temperature is now sustaining in the mid-70s. Quit looking for clean water. It doesn't matter anymore. The water's going to be muddy and ugly for a long time now. You don't necessarily need to look for clean water. Every fish we pulled out on Monday and every fish I've pulled out of the Galveston area in the past 2 to 3 weeks has been out of very muddy water. So they know where to find the fish. You need those. They know where to find the bait the fish are going to eat. So you got to be a little more accurate. You got to get a little closer to them, but you're going to catch these fish in muddy water. Throw a dark color, something that shimmers and shines if you can. Anything you can to catch some attention. The underspins are not a terrible idea. Some kind of bugs would work. They're going to eat just about anything you throw in front of them right now. But that's the trick. You got to throw it in front of them. Where do you go look for schooling redfish? Well, the tide has been up ever since Monday. Those fish are pushing further and further back, but there is a tad bit of territorial nature to their schooling because, like I've mentioned a lot of times, the shrimp are anchoring to the bottom in the mud. When they anchor in the bottom down in the mud, they are not going to be tossed about to and fro with the tide all that much. They're going to stay in the area they want to stay in. That means that the redfish are going to need to frequent those areas, even if the tide comes up a foot and now all of a sudden you've got a foot and a half, 2 foot of water in a place that you had 6 inches of water in last week. So rule of thumb is everything's going to push a little further back, but don't sleep on those early front lakes because there are still shrimp anchored to the bottom. That would be your ticket. I've been waiting on my voice to return to normal and for me to feel a little better to get Scott on here. I am hoping that next week we're going to record the episode with Scott and get that out on the podcast for next week. That's the plan. We'll see what his schedule has to say about that. So while we were down in Port O'Connor a couple weeks ago, I was talking to Scott about getting a fly lesson, a fly casting lesson, and he mentioned that years ago he was at this fly cast practice thing where a bunch of people were standing around this pool or something like that practicing casting. And Andy Packmore, who works for Gordy and Son, I don't know if he worked for Gordy and Son back then, but he helped Scott out with some of his casting. I'm like, oh, well, I know Andy. That's who I bought my rod from. And I just saw him again when I took my rod in to get it repaired. And so I booked a lesson with Andy, and I had that lesson this morning. And it was awesome. A lot of things started to click for me with the fly casting. I still make some mistakes, obviously, but now when I do it, I know I'm making the mistake and I can correct it. I also learned a few little tricks from him to recalibrate myself when I'm off, like get back on the horse the right way, throw a few false casts and get used to the rhythm of the haul, to be able to get, you know, your line out there and, you know, make sure you're doing hard stops with your rod and everything. So it was super helpful. Now I've just got to find time to get out there and put it into practice. And with the wind blowing the way it is, it's going to be tough. But, you know, you just got to, conditions aren't always perfect. You just got to go for it. So I'm going to be doing that every chance I can. Let's talk about the weather coming up over the weekend. We have it's not a front, but we do have some kind of weather system blowing in. I had a trip booked for Friday. Tomorrow, Thursday, today, when you're listening to this, it's still going to be somewhat breezy, but not near as bad. We basically got the same kind of conditions we had on Monday. But Friday, it's going to blow a sustained 20. It's going to be gusting into the 30s. It's going to be that way Saturday, Sunday, the whole deal. So not a great weekend to get out on the water, especially if you're in a kayak. Sunday morning, sustained 24, gust into 35. That ain't good, folks. So now's a good time to do that family thing or whatever, because this weekend ain't it. I wouldn't go out there in your kayak or your skiff. Wait for that wind to calm down just a bit. It's probably going to pump our water up even more. We're going to see some crazy high tides. And then, things are going to get back to normal. The wind's going to chill out next week. And when I say chill out, I mean, it's going to be 10 to 20, you know. That's what springtime is. That's what we have to deal with. Once you get up to sustained winds around 18, 20, and you're gusting above that, it gets really difficult. There's nowhere to hide, especially on the southeast wind. It just becomes a difficult situation, and in some cases can be unsafe. So watch out, and don't throw caution to the wind when you're looking at the forecast. Play it safe. You're not going to go out there in 25 mile an hour wind, 30 mile an hour wind and have fun anyway. It's just not going to happen. All right. This episode's going to be a little shorter than normal just because I am fighting the urge to cough or sniff every other second. And so chances are, Lord willing, I'm going to be much better next week. I hope I'm better by Monday. I'm supposed to go record 2 songs and 2 videos for some unrecorded music I have that I'm trying to get recorded and get out there. If you stumbled upon this podcast, you should know that the intro and outro music is from a band I used to play in called Market Junction. We're on Spotify, and you can see all of our stuff there. Our latest record, Burning Bridges, is out there. Just kind of a weird aside rabbit hole that you can dive into if you so choose. I am not making very much money off of that, so that is not a plug to try to line my pockets. I do it because I love it, and that's it. So let's get into our Bible tidbit. This week we're talking about Ruth. The book of Ruth, but we're really, in talking about Ruth, we're really going to talk about Boaz. I know, it's kind of a weird name, right? Boaz is this dude that lived in Israel, and I'm going to give you a summarization of the book of Ruth because I think that's important to the context. And then a character that we've talked about in the past is going to pop up in the middle of the story. And there's something I want to tell you about the Bible in general. Jesus is on every page. Not just the New Testament. He's on every page in the Old Testament. The entirety of the Old Testament and the New Testament are joining together to tell one cohesive story about the redemption of mankind and the glory of God in Jesus Christ. Okay? And if you read it with your eyes set on Jesus, you can unlock some of the truths that are being told in a really cool way. And here's one of those things. All right. Ruth is the daughter-in-law of a lady named Naomi. All right. Naomi had 2 sons. The sons marry Moabite women. That's important. They marry Moabite women, and then the boys die. daughter-in-law number one named Orpah. She's like, well, your son is dead and I love you, Ruth, but I'm still young. I could remarry. I'm going to go remarry. Well, the thing is, Ruth didn't have anyone to take care of her because her husband had passed also. So she's a widower, and now both her sons are dead. Ruth is the only one she has left. But Naomi urges Ruth, hey, you're young. Do like Orpah did. Go live your life. Get married. Join another family. I'll be okay on my own. Ruth says to her, do not urge me to leave you. I will go where you go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Okay? She's a Moabite woman, not an Israelite. All right? That's important. So, they are in the land of, I didn't look this up and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm fairly certain they're in the land of Israel. In that day and age, there is a concept called the Redeemer. When you had a near relative that when a son died or a man died, the nearest relative could basically pay some type of dowry and buy that person's land and redeem the family by taking the position as the husband, basically taking the wife and the land and making sure that the people involved in that scenario were cared for and secure, because there was no safety net of society, right? So like Naomi is in a pretty bad spot without Ruth, and they're really not in a great spot together because they're two, an old woman and a young woman, and they're poor. They're basically, Ruth is having to glean the wheat fields. Gleaning the wheat fields means after they've come through and harvested the wheat, there's leftover heads of wheat that have fallen, and the poor of the day, or the widow that had no one to take care of them, young women would gather in the field that they got permission from the owner from, and they would glean that field and pick up all of the leftover wheat heads. That is what Ruth is doing in Boaz's field. Boaz takes notice of her. He takes a liking to her. And he decides, through kind of a long, drawn-out process, that he is going to redeem Ruth. Because Boaz is a near relative of Naomi. So, Boaz is what we would consider in Scripture a type of Christ. I've mentioned this before in the podcast, just to give you a brief overview. A type of Christ is someone in the biblical narrative that exudes Christ-like qualities in either the way that they behave, but it's more than that. It's more about the role that they play in the meta narrative, in the overall story, right? And so Boaz decides he's going to redeem Ruth. And in doing so, he is also redeeming Naomi and giving her a social security in a sense. So he does that. He pays and, satisfies the debt, if you get where I'm going with that, and redeems her, brings her out of poverty, restores her as a wife. And the cool thing about that story, there's lots of cool things, but one of the coolest things is, guess who Boaz's mother is? It's Rahab. If you need a refresher on that, Rahab was a prostitute in the city of Jericho, a Moabite prostitute in the city of Jericho. She was not of this royal blood. She was not even of Israelite blood. God saved her when the Israelites attacked the Moabites in the city of Jericho, Rahab was a spy for them, and Rahab protected their spies. And in doing so, God saved her from the destruction, and she was grafted into the tribe of Israel, married an Israelite man named Salmon, or Salmon, however you say it, and they had a son named Boaz. Boaz redeems Ruth after Naomi's two sons die, and guess who ends up becoming an heir in that bloodline? Jesus Christ himself. Pretty cool. That's your Bible tidbit for the week. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's empty_stringers. Shoot me an email at emptystringers@gmail.com. Follow me on the TikToks at emptystringers. I'm booking up pretty fast. If you want to get with me, go on the website. That's the best way to do it. It's up to date. Pick you out a date. It's capped Matt, M-A-T-T, Parrish, P-A-R-R-I-S-H.com. CappedMattParrish.com. Book you a trip. I would love to take you out fishing. Y'all have a great week. I'll be full of energy and not sound like I have a blocked airway next week. If you get a chance and you need something fun to throw, go throw Kevin's custom painted outside lures. I'm also a big fan of the Diamond G stuff that Wayne Griggs has. I'm a big fan of the Caden lures, and I'm waiting patiently for the 3-inch to come out. Jacob, if you're listening, come on, man. I need some 3-inch paddle tails. So get on all that. Go listen to the Salty Yak. Go listen to the Bear Grease podcast. Go obviously listen to the Bite Me podcast. And we'll see you next time. Take care.